Hello there, guess who it is? It's Silly Auntie Sissy, your favorite auntie. We got fun, we got love, we got everything you need. We got adventures we're going on, cause I'm your Silly Auntie Sissy, and I'm your favorite auntie. So welcome to the Silly Auntie Sissy Show. That's a tongue twister. Welcome to the Silly Auntie Sissy Show, hosted by me and Uni, the magical unicorn. Dinah went to live with my niece, so we got a replacement host. He said, I'll stay with it, with niece Clementine. And you, unicorn, are now, yay! We miss you, Dinah, but here I am. I'm the magical unicorn. I've been on a few episodes, but thanks for finally introducing me. I love you. And I love you. Alright, guys. We are here to talk about Lunasa. What's Lunasa? Well, Lunasa, Uni, is just like you, a magical, very old holiday. Well, you're not a holiday, I know. But Lunasa comes from Ireland and the Gaelics, and it's the first day of autumn where you celebrate nature and you celebrate the harvest, and in my mind you celebrate the things yet to come, everything you watch grow in the summer and the spring. Yeah, sorry. I was just thinking about Lunasa and my ancestors. It's a very powerful time. It's a magical time. So, here we are to celebrate Lunasa. We got some fun books to read. We got some magic times. Of course, we got activities to do. And if you want to do something with your child on Lunasa, we are going to say, why don't you make some changes? Or you could have a parade, a Lunasa parade, celebrating the harvest. On Lunasa, you dance in bonfires. Now, you might not want to do that with your kids unless you're planning a party. You could plan a party for Lunasa. And it's not too late, because usually you could jump over the moon. Watch out. Because it's around the full moon. Crescent-shaped moons cut from a 10-inch paper circle. Tape. How high and far can the children jump? See if they would like to show you. Tape a crescent moon on the floor and let the children take turns jumping over it. If one moon is easy, see if they can jump over three or four. One at a time. Without stopping. Space the moon so there is room to land between each one. Traffic light game. That's good. Those are good games to play on Lunasa, aren't they? Yes, they sound like beautiful ones. Now, we're going to read a poem. Tumble spaghetti from where the sidewalk ends. Spaghetti, spaghetti all over the place, up to my elbows, up to my face. Over the carpet and under the chairs, into the hammock and around the stars, into the hammock and around the stars we go, filling the bathtub and covering the desk, making the sofa a mad mushy mess. The party is ruined, I'm terribly worried, the guests have all left, unless they're all buried. I told them bring presents, I said, throw confetti, I guess they've heard wrong, because they all threw spaghetti. Helping. Now, here's a good one for Lunasa. Agatha Fry, she made a pie, and Christopher John helped bake it. Christopher John, he mowed the lawn, and Agatha helped rake it. Zachary Zug took out the rug, and Jennifer Joy helped shake it. And Jennifer Joy, she made a toy, and Zachary Zug helped break it. Oh, poor Zachary Zug. And some kind of help is the kind of help that's helping all about. And some kind of help is the kind of help we can all do without. But you might want to ask Zachary Zug why he broke the toy. Just like unicorn, here's an animal that lived a long time ago. If I had a brontosaurus, I would name him Horace or Morris. But if suddenly one day he had a lot of little brontosauries, I would change the name to Lori. And there you go. All right. Great one. Now, last poem before we read on to the Boxcar Children Lunasa story. How about an elephant? Elephant, a spirit in the bush. Elephant who brings death. He swallows a whole palm fruit, thorns and all. He tramples down the grass with his mortar legs. Whenever he walks, the grass is forbidden to stand up again. He tears a man like an old rug and hangs him up in the tree with his single hand. He pulls two palm trees to the ground. If he had two hands, he would tear the heavens to shreds. An elephant is not a load for the old man, nor for a young man either. The eagle. One last one. And that one is by Anonymous. The eagle. He clasps the crag with crooked hands, close to the sun in lonely hands. Ringed with the Azora world, he stands. The wrinkled sea beneath him crawls. He watches from his mountain walls, and like a thunderbolt, he falls. Alfred Lord Tennyson. Here's a nice thing. The world around us is always changing in ways we might not notice from day to day, but poems capture those teeny changes and special celebrations in the natural world. Daffodils waving in the wind, geese honking overhead in the gray autumn sky, or snow covering everything white. Some changes happen almost invisibly. One day the light seems different, the days are longer, and there is time to go outside after school. The great Spanish poet Antonio Machado wrote about this transformation. Nobody knows how it happened. Spring has come. Poetry connects the different times, and we can always change that. Nobody knows. Spring, autumn has come. Nobody knows how it happened. Poetry connects the different times of year with our deepest emotions, joy, sadness, faith, and love. The passage from the book of Ecclesiastes and the Acharoes, prayer, share an acceptance as our place in the natural world. Shakespeare's sonnet, shall I compare thee to a summer's day, connects the woman he loves to one of God's most beautiful creations. And in Who Has Seen the Wind, Christina Rossetti reminds us that some of the most powerful forces in our lives are not visible. At some point in our school years, we all have to write a poem about autumn. I've always liked my mother's poem, Thoughts, because it captures the feeling of sitting in a school daydreaming about a life of adventure. I include it here to inspire future poets during those back-to-school days. And if you're in the United States, back-to-school days are coming about. And with autumn comes school. But the Boxcar Children are not in school. They are still on holiday. And school has not started yet. Shall we look and see what they're up to? Yes, please. I like the Boxcar Children. So, I believe, we just finished the chapter Surprises. Now we're on to chapter 7, Clues. They just thought someone was on the island. So here we go. Chapter 7, Clues. The next day at breakfast, Jesse said, Lars, how about that fish stew today? For grandfather, said Henry. He loves fish stew. So do I, said Mike, all but the fish. You're funny, Mike, said Benny. What do you like if you don't like the fish? Well, I like the milk and I like the crackers, said Mike. Lars smiled at Mike's. He said, this will be the day to eat the sea biscuit. Today we'll call them crackers. Soon they all walked down to the beach to wash their cups and shells, and Benny and Mike ran around picking up colored stones and shells. Lars picked up the tin box with the fish lines. Look at the great big shell sticking up, said Mike. Come on, Ben, help me get it out. The boys dug the sand away with their hands. Oh, it's enormous, Henry, cried Benny. It's as big as a wash tub. Henry came back to look. Lars, he called. It is as big as a wash tub. What is it? But Mr. Alden was there first. It's a turtle shell, he said. A turtle shell, cried Mike. I never saw a turtle as big as this. I have, said Lars. That turtle must have weighed 300 pounds when it was alive. He was a big fellow. They grew big around here. Well, let's use it for a stew kettle, said Mike. Isn't it wonderful, said Violet. We've had a kettle the very day we made for... We find a kettle the very day we find a fish, and we try to make fish stew. The boys went on digging. At last they took hold of the shell and pulled it out. It was full of wet sand. Let's wash my shell, said Mike. Oh, it's your shell, Mike, said Henry. Well, I guess it's yours. You found it. We can all use it, said Mike. I just mean I saw it first. They all helped carry the shell down to the water. It was very heavy. Let's put it down here, said Jesse. Let the waves wash over it. They did so, and suddenly Benny shouted, look at it, look at it. Violet called in excitement. Come here, Grandfather. Look at Mike's shell. Lars said, look at the turtle's back, Mr. Alden, if you please. And there on the turtle's shell was a pattern. It was cut in the shell. It was exactly like the pattern of stones in the sea pool. Just exactly the same, cried Benny, sitting down suddenly. A big round circle in the middle and everything. Jesse said softly, and now we know somebody lives here. This shell be old, but the pattern in the sea pool is very new, because the tide would have washed it out to sea. Too bad we have to use this for a kettle, said Lars. It's too pretty. Oh, no, cried Mike. I want my shell to be a kettle. I'll always remember that I find out fish stew kettle. I'll always remember that I found our fish stew kettle. I think your turtle must have died, Mike, said Henry. And then someone found the shell and made the pattern with a knife. Could be, said Lars. It could be the same one who made the pattern with the stone, said Jesse. You're right, someone is here, said Mr. Alden. But we must get on with our fishing. Lars, let's pull this shell up on the beach. We can get it on our way back. Suppose we don't fish. We don't catch any fish, said Henry. Oh, we will. I know many places, said Lars. Don't worry about that. Soon they reached the pool. Lars said, take off your shoes and walk right in. Benny is right that no sharks can get in here. Sit on the big rocks. I'll give you each a fish line in a minute. But it turned out that Lars had only 4 fish lines. It's just as well, said Mrs. Alden. You girls sit on the rocks and watch. Don't bother with those small fish, said Lars. Wait for a grouper. There's a grouper in the pool now, said Violet. Here's a big one. He should be easy to catch. Henry and Mike moved over near Violet. They all let their lines down beside the fish. He lay still. Henry moved his line. Mike moved his, but the big fish did not bite. Well, let me try too, said Lars. Come on, Benny. We'll all try to catch him. So there were 4 people trying to catch 1 fish. He began to swim slowly away, but he did not take the hook in his mouth. What do you know, said Benny. Humph, said Lars. They waited 10 minutes. They pulled the lines up and let them down again. Suddenly the fish turned and took hold of Henry's hook. Then he began to throw himself around. Henry pulled him in. "Don't lose him now," yelled Benny. "We waited long enough." "He will do," said Lars. "He will make a big stew. We can catch more later." They walked home. Henry carried the big fish on the stick. The children pulled the turtle shell as far as the fireplace and sat down. They waited to see what Lars would do next. "First, I'll catch the fish," said Lars. "He's dead now. I'll take off his head and his tail, and then I will cut him down the backbone. "You take out the insides, don't you?" said Benny. "And throw them away." "Right," said Lars. "There you go. Hello. Wait a minute. What's this?" Lars took back the fish's stomach and pulled out a white button. "Now, will you tell me where this fish got a button?" he said. "Somebody lost a button," said Jesse. "That's sure. Let me see it." "It looks quite new," she said. "It's an American button, and it has four holes in it." "Looks like a shirt button," said Mike. "Let's save it." "Oh, yes, indeed," said Grandfather. "It's a clue." Lars cut the fish into four pieces. He turned the turtle shell upside down. He put the fish into it. "I like my kettle," said Mike happily. "It's a good old kettle," said Benny. "Shall I put the water on the fish now, Lars?" "Yes, it must cook for a while. Then the fish will be soft, and we can cut it into smaller pieces and take off the skin and take out the bones." "I like onions in my fish stew," Lars said Benny. "But of course, we couldn't bring any onions." "No," said Lars, laughing. He took some dried onions out of the box and put them in the turtle shell. "I like onions too," he said. Suddenly a strange voice said, "Hello, Peter." "Who in the world is that?" whispered Benny. Lars shouted, "Come out of the trees." The palm moved a little in the wind. They saw nobody. But all at once, a little purple bird hopped out on a branch. It put its head on one side and said, "Hello, Peter." "Well, well, a bird," said Mike, "a talking bird." "What is it, Lars?" asked Jesse. "I don't know," said Lars. "I know," said Mr. Alden. "It's a Maya bird." "Oh, yes, it is, Grandfather," said Henry. "Don't you remember, Jesse? We saw them on TV." "So we did," said Jesse. "There was a lady from a pet shop. She had two or three Maya birds. She had taught them to say lots of things." They all looked at each other. The bird said again, "Hello, Peter." Mike said somebody had to teach us bird. "Ben, did you think of that?" "Yes, I did." "I think it must have been Peter." "Yes," said Henry. "It must have been Peter, whoever he is." Chapter 8, Cooking and Swimming. Wow. Stay tuned for more episodes of The Boxtown Children Blue Bay Mystery. Well, that's amazing. There's 14 chapters and we're on 8. So we should be done, boys and girls and moms and dads, in 6 days. That's 6 episodes. 6 more episodes to find out how the mystery is solved. I'm excited. Are you guys? "I am," said Uni. "Yes, I know you are, and I am too." Guys, I want to thank you for listening. It's been a wonderful adventure on the Blue Bay Island. If you can't go somewhere, go in your imagination. Your imagination will take you many places. That's right, Uni. How very true. I love you, and I love you, and we love you! Thanks for listening, guys. Stay tuned, and thanks for listening to Silly Auntie Sissy Radio Theater, where your favorite auntie will listen to you and give you cookies. I'm your auntie. Bye, guys. Tia, as they say in Italy. And if I was in Ireland and you were my niece, I would say nisht in Gaelic. How do you say auntie and niece where you live? Discuss. Bye, guys. Happy Luna. I hope you had a great Lunasa and do some of those. Bye-bye from Silly Auntie Sissy and Unicorn. Have more adventures.